Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
This was pure evil. It was straight up racially motivated hate crime from somebody outside of our community, outside of the city of Good Neighbors, as the mayor said, coming into our community and trying to inflict that evil upon us.
The Erie County Sheriff calling the racist shooting rampage at a grocery store in a mostly black neighborhood of Buffalo pure evil. This morning, we are learning more about the victims, the racist ideology that allegedly drove the suspects' hate, and the far-right voices that have made those beliefs mainstream. We have several guests to help us sort through this tragedy, including the mayor of Buffalo, who will join us in the fourth hour of Morning Joe. Plus, the latest from Ukraine. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell leads a delegation of Senate Republicans on an unannounced visit to Kyiv, even as one of his members slows progress on military aid that Washington has been trying to fast track. We'll tell you where that legislation stands right now. And a key component of Russia's propaganda machine is at risk as bloggers embedded with Russian troops are fed up with the repeated failures and are now voicing concern. Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It's Monday, May 16th. We start with the very latest on that deadly shooting in Buffalo over the weekend. The White House says the president and the first lady will visit the city tomorrow to, quote, grieve with the community. Speaking at the National Peace Officers Memorial Service in Washington yesterday, President Biden addressed what the Department of Justice is investigating as an act of racially motivated domestic extremism.
The lone gunman, armed with weapons of war and hate-filled soul, shot and killed 10 innocent people in cold blood. We must all work together to address the hate that remains a stain on the soul of America. The hearts are heavy once again, but a resolve must never, ever waver.
Meanwhile, we are learning more about the alleged shooter in the attack. Police say an 18-year-old from Conklin, New York, traveled more than 200 miles from his home on Saturday to the grocery store in Buffalo, where he allegedly killed 10 people and injured three others and live streamed it. A law enforcement official told NBC News the suspect was investigated by New York State Police last year for making a threatening statement in June when he was a minor. The threat was about wanting to carry out a shooting, according to a different senior law enforcement official. A state police spokesman who did not release a name to NBC News said the subject of the investigation had been transported to the hospital for a mental health evaluation at the time and was not charged with a crime. In social media posts made before Saturday's attack, which were reviewed by the Washington Post, the suspect reportedly explained how he used census data to zero in on a neighborhood with a high percentage of black residents. Of the 13 people shot, police say 11 were black. The gun he reportedly used, a legally purchased semi-automatic that was modified with his father's power drill and a kit he purchased separately. According to the New York Times, it also had racial slurs written all over it in marker. We are also learning more this morning about the manifesto allegedly written by the suspect, which laid out the plans for his attack. The PDF, which was posted on Google Doc just 2 days before the shooting, has been reviewed by NBC News. In it are dozens of pages of anti-Semitic and racist remarks and repeated mentions of the so-called Great Replacement Theory. That theory falsely claims through immigration, interracial marriage, and violence, Jewish conspirators are attempting to eliminate the white population. Those beliefs have been pushed by a growing number of far-right commentators in recent years and cited by multiple mass shooters. One such incident in 2019, where a white supremacist killed 51 people at two New Zealand mosques, was mentioned repeatedly in the alleged manifesto of the Buffalo suspect. In those documents, the suspect allegedly wrote that he became radicalized while using the popular message board site 4chan when he was bored at the start of the pandemic. A senior law enforcement official tells NBC News they are working to verify the authenticity of those writings. Joe.
Fear locks our minds on the past, and it makes us anxious about the future. Fear allows us to hate people we don't know, and it even makes us forget the best in ourselves. Once again, fear is a tool being used by media moguls and tyrants to target the weakest and most emotionally fragile among us. Fear feeds on the dispossessed minds mired in lost causes like this. Like Faulkner's Quentin, whose, quote, very body was an empty hall echoing with sonorous defeated names. Faulkner wrote, it was a barracks filled with stubborn, backwards-looking ghosts. Or like Hitler's Germany, haunted by a shattering defeat after World War I. Or Russia's Putin, a tyrant who has unleashed terror on an entire continent because he is still stricken a generation later by the collapse of the Soviet Union. Or yes, like that infected appendage still attached to the GOP, the Trump wing, fueled by white grievance and wild conspiracies. Those conspiracies pushed by a former president, House Republican leaders, social media monopolies, and a powerful cable news network. Billionaires, they're leveraging that fear to make more money and to gain even more power by preying on the aggrieved, working every day to turn white against black, white against Hispanic, white against Muslim, and white against Jew. It is the most grotesque of marketing schemes that is killing. Yes, literally killing those very Americans whose existence is now being used as leverage by news networks and a political party to breed that fear, to make more money, and to win votes. It is sick. And to talk about it, let's bring in NBC News reporter Ben Collins, who broke the story of the alleged manifesto written by the Buffalo shooter. Pulitzer Prize winning columnist and associate editor of The Washington Post and MSNBC political analyst Eugene Robinson, host of MSNBC's Politics Nation and president of the National Action Network, Reverend Al Sharpton, and the host of Way Too Early and White House bureau chief at Politico, Jonathan Lemire. You look at all the instances where white replacement theory, which has been pushed by House Republicans, pushed by a powerful news network, pushed by people on social media. And you do see that it's whites, a white killing blacks in a mass shooting in Charleston and then in New Zealand and then killing Hispanics in El Paso and killing blacks again in Buffalo, killing Jews in Pittsburgh in 2018 in a synagogue. It is sadly, tragically, it is a conspiracy theory that has deadly, deadly impact.
It is definitely a conspiracy theory that has definite and clear impact, and it continues to happen. And we keep going to these scenes of these grotesque murders, like this is not becoming some continuity of political expression by some who may be weaker minded, but are influenced by people that have now become the maintainers of the mainstream. Let's not forget, Joe, this young person that is being held as the shooter in Buffalo is 18 years old. He was around 15, maybe 14 when Charlottesville happened, when whites marched through the streets saying, "Jews will not replace me." And the then president of the United States said they'll find people on both sides, which order in some automatic way says the young impressed minds like that, there's nothing wrong with reading these manifestos. There's nothing wrong with having these kinds of feelings. They're not marginalized. And I think that we are beginning, you and I are Baptist in the best tradition. You reap what you sow. We have sowed these kinds of hate seeds. We have allowed them to fester, and we've legitimatized or normalized them. And we should not be surprised. The only question is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to aggressively fight it? Are we going to show empathy where we ought to show aggressive resistance?
Yeah. Gene Robinson, you two were in Charleston with us after that tragic church shooting. It seems an understatement to say that this conspiracy theory has only gained steam, and as the Rev said, has become so mainstream, not only on a powerful cable news network, but you now have House Republican leaders who are putting it in Facebook ads.
That's the thing. That's the thing, Joe. Two things. First of all, no one should call the person accused of this horrific and just unspeakable crime a lone gunman. He had backup.
Yes.
He had backup from the killers who came before him in Charleston, in El Paso, in Pittsburgh, and in New Zealand. He had that backup, and he also had backup from those who are playing footsie with this replacement theory in order to win votes, in order to win television ratings, in order to grift the American public in a way that is just unconscionable. And who are we talking about? Rev, you said we have enabled this. Who do you mean we? I mean, I'm going to point the finger at those who are doing it. Point the finger at people like Elise Stefanik, who's in the Republican leadership, who used to be just a kind of normal, small government, pro-business Republican, saw that was not the way to power, and then went completely MAGA, wanted the party to burn Liz Cheney at the stake for being honest about what happened on January 6th. And now she's on Facebook. She's playing with great replacement theory and putting it out there in a way that is just unspeakable and unthinkable, but it's happening. It's not just her. This is becoming part of the mainstream ideology of the Republican Party right now. And that is unacceptable, but it's happening. And when and how is it going to stop? Because this is going to continue. This is predictable. It's going to continue. There are going to be more of these.
Yeah, and Ben, I guess that's what's so shocking is that you've reported for years, and we're used to people putting up crazed manifestos on 4chan, crazed manifestos before killings, the killing in New Zealand. Seemed like a crazed manifesto from a lone wolf. But here we are years and years later, and it has become mainstream. Again, House Republican leaders not only are using this in ads, but the silence is deafening. No one's criticizing TV hosts that are making millions off of preaching hate, spreading the great replacement theory. Nobody's calling out people on social media that are talking about the great replacement theory. They aren't doing it. The person that the highest ranking Republican is like tweeting out her prayers and support for the very people who were killed by a theory that she was promoting on social media.
Yeah, Joe, I want to make this clear. This was not a lone wolf. And you can just take it from him. He was trying to remain alive in this shooting, which is what he wrote in his manifesto, because he thought he had a community on the internet that he needed to still issue things to after he was caught. That community is people like Brenton Tarrant, who shot up that mosque and killed 50 people in New Zealand. But it's also people like Patrick Cruces, who, you know, they're the El Paso shooter, the Poway shooter, the Garlic Gilroy Festival shooter. These are all people who ascribe to the same ideology. It's the idea that Jews are trying to push in non-white immigrants into the United States to marry whites, to eventually kill whites, to just generally take over the electorate. Now, this is a large group of people. This is a community on the internet. It was a community that had more standing for this person who was a child when he started to get radicalized at 16 years old at the start of the pandemic on 4chan. He said he got radicalized out of extreme boredom at the start of 2020. He was 16 then. And that's what happened here. He found that community there in that online space when he couldn't go outside. He couldn't meet people in real life. So he was closer tied to these mass shooters online than he was to anyone in real life. And then there are people in the mainstream who are seeing this as an opportunity. There are a lot of online people on the right who are young, who don't necessarily ascribe to old-fashioned GOP ideology. They don't care about taxes. They think climate change is real, for example. This person, Peyton Gendron, the suspect, you know, he was a self-admitted eco-fascist, which basically means he thinks climate change is real. He thinks all of the degradation of our ecosystem is real. All of that stuff is happening. Pollution is real. But his belief is that you have to hoard stuff. And you have to separate stuff by race, and that the race that should remain is white people. So this is a new kind of fascism. This is a in terms of ties to the mainstream right. But it's very real with young people. It's really happening. And there are people, and I don't think we should be dancing around this name. There are people like Tucker Carlson who are directly trying to preach to these people. There are people on 4chan who call him our guy, the only guy in the mainstream media who speaks up for them. That man is actively trying to appeal to these people. It's extremely dangerous. He's the highest rated show in cable news. It's extremely dangerous when he is actively trying to appeal to people who have this very warped idea of reality based on white grievance.
So to your point, before we get to the president's plan, just two graphs from Gene's piece, just to back this up. What we need to talk about is how politicians and thought leaders on the right are using the vile poison of replacement theory to further their own selfish ends. And we need to talk about how most of this demagoguery is coming from people who should know and probably do know that what they are telling is complete fiction. The accused Buffalo killer took pains to choose a location where he knew the victims would be people of color. Blame him for what he did, but also blame the prominent right-wing voices that egged him on. And that's exactly who we're talking about today, whether it's politicians or people on television who use their platform in the most irresponsible way to make money and to stoke hate on the most vile level. Jonathan Lemire, the president, is making plans now, changing his plans and going to Buffalo along with the First Lady. Give us a sense of what's going to happen.
That's right, Mika. The president yesterday spoke at the National Peace Officers Memorial and denounced what happened in Buffalo. He did so as the Department of Justice announced it will be investigating that shooting as a hate crime, the racist motives of the shooter. And the president and the first lady will be traveling to upstate New York tomorrow. I actually will be part of the pool of reporters traveling with the president on Air Force One as he goes to pay respects to those lost, salute those who behaved heroically in trying to take down this shooter, and of course, mourn with the victims and their grieving families. And Reverend Sharpton, this came a weekend of terrible shootings. I know we'll get to more of them later as the show rolls on. And all, of course, done with renewed the questions about what to do about guns. This particular firearm was legally purchased, but it was illegally modified. And yet we have right now a Republican Party that not only has members nodding and winking at things like the Great Replacement Theory, but also has shown firm opposition to any sort of gun control measures. What can the president, Democrats do?
The Democrats and the president should make this a real central issue, both, not one or the other, but both, and both the gun control issue as well as the issue of how we deal with the question of hate crimes. One of the things that I did the evening that this became known to us through, I got calls early before it hit the news from our National Action Network chapter in Buffalo, is I reached out to the head of the Anti-Defamation League and LULAC of the Latino community, and all of us jointly with the National Urban League have asked the president to call a White House meeting on hate crimes. But also in that, we must discuss gun control. We're in the middle of a midterm election season. We need to make sure that a lot of those elections are determined by who takes a firm stand on what to do around hate crime enforcement and around gun control. We can't live in an era of Buffalo and of El Paso and of Pittsburgh and act like we're in a different era. We must address the times in which we live. Otherwise, you're not fit to hold office.
Reverend Al Sharpton and NBC's Ben Collins, thank you very much. Ahead on Morning Joe, we'll be joined live by the mayor of Buffalo and the Erie County District Attorney. By the way, the shooting in Buffalo was just one of a handful of mass shootings from over the weekend. In Southern California, an attack during lunch at a church left one person dead and five others injured. The victims at the Geneva Presbyterian Church range in age from 65 to 92 years old. The sheriff's office says parishioners showed exceptional heroism and bravery by grabbing the gunman and hog-tying him with electrical extension cords before officers arrived. The majority of the churchgoers are of Taiwanese descent, and the suspect in custody is an Asian man in his 60s. Investigators are still working on a motive, but they do not believe the shooter lives in the community, which is made up mostly of retirees. We're also going to get a live report from California ahead in the fourth hour of Morning Joe. Still ahead, despite Russia's insistence that its invasion is going according to plan, there is growing evidence that Moscow's forces continue to suffer on the ground. We'll go to Clint Watts at the maps. Plus, in the race for Pennsylvania governor, former President Trump throws his support behind a Republican candidate who has promoted false claims of a stolen 2020 election. What it means for Pennsylvania's primaries tomorrow. Also ahead, Senator Ted Cruz mocks Republicans who suck up to former President Trump. Huh? Does he not see the irony? We will show you that video ahead. And the latest on the baby formula shortage across the country. There is now growing concern about just how long that shortage will last. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
27 past the hour. We turn now to the latest on the war in Ukraine. Despite Russia's insistence that its invasion is going according to plan, there is growing evidence that Moscow's forces continue to suffer on the ground. Ukrainian officials say Russian forces endured heavy losses last week after their troops blew up a key pontoon bridge in the Luhansk region in the east. According to the Institute for the Study of War, more than 400 Russian soldiers were killed or injured in the attack, and over 80 pieces of equipment were destroyed. Officials say the strike was a significant blow to the Kremlin's plans in eastern Ukraine. The incident also led several pro-Russian bloggers, some of whom are embedded with the troops on the front line and have been making claims of Russian successes, to publicly criticize their military. Many of them posted on social media that they were, quote, shocked at what they called the Russian military's incompetence. One of the bloggers, with more than 2 million followers on Telegram, writes, quote, I've been keeping quiet for a long time, but when the same problems go on for 3 months and nothing seems to be changing, then I personally, and in fact, millions of citizens of the Russian Federation, start to have questions for the leaders of the military operation. Joe, it definitely appears to be falling apart.
Well, it does appear to be falling apart. And forgive me for reminding viewers, but it's exactly what we've been saying right here for the past several weeks. If you have a military that has a terrible culture, that can't do the most basic of logistical operations, if that's happening in Kyiv, you can move as many troops as you want east, but it's going to keep happening. You can't fix culture overnight. And these disasters are going to just keep happening, as we've been saying repeatedly here. Let's bring in right now national security analyst for NBC News and MSNBC, Clint Watts. He's at the big board, and also the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, Richard Haass. Clint, you can't fix culture overnight. You fix it over a decade or so. I was speaking a couple of weeks ago about the culture post-Vietnam from 75 to 80. You talk to anybody that served during that time, they will tell you the recruits were of a lower quality for the most part. There was a lack of discipline. It took 5, 6, 7 years after Vietnam for our military culture to snap back. That's not going to happen in 6 or 7 weeks in Russia. And my God, talk about the impact that it's having in this war and the tragedy for the Russians that happened on the Eastern Front.
Joe, when you lose Telegram propagandists, and they are for the Russians, totally in the tank, imagine how bad it is on the ground for the soldiers that are trying to fight this fight if you're the Russian soldiers. Major developments over the last 2 to 3 days, again, all negative for Russia, fairly positive for Ukraine. What you see in the east is all of the battle here is moved in this direction. But more importantly, it's the success that we're seeing from some of the Ukrainian counteroffensives. I had doubts a few weeks ago they'd even be able to really undertake any counteroffensive because they needed to move all their troops. They had to recover from Kyiv. They're advancing. This map, we'll be updating it today. It looks like the Ukrainians have advanced all the way into this area here. That's important because they're pushing into the supply and communication lines for this Izium axis. We've been talking about this Izium axis for 2 to 3 weeks now. Separate and out here, there are convoys, essentially logistical convoys, that move in from Russia coming in from this direction. If the Ukrainians, every time they put pressure on this, the Russian military has to move back to really reinforce this communication line. I think that speaks to the bigger problem that the Russians are having just across the board. Instead of going for the big envelopment, which we thought they might do in the beginning, instead of going here from Izium down to Donetsk, you're seeing them push through. That river crossing that was right here, this is essential for them because they have to move from one side up here in the north down here to the south to envelop this area, Severodonetsk. It's a key area if they want to take the rest of the Luhansk region. They couldn't do it. They were talking about losing 70 to 80 vehicles. That's an entire 1 to 2 battalion tactical groups of the Russians. If they are losing that much troop and manpower here, you can't even get through that river now. There's so many vehicles that have been destroyed there. How will they even take this more intermediate objective rather than the bigger one? This speaks to their larger plan. In the beginning, what we saw in terms of what they were trying to do was create a giant hook here to take all of Donbass. This is what Putin essentially restated on May 9th. He wanted to take all of Donbass. This is the Donetsk region of Donbass. This is the Luhansk region. You're seeing them start to move and do much smaller envelopments. Their goal probably much more muted now to just try and take that small part. They haven't even taken all of the eastern. When you go to the south, it's another situation where one has to ask, what was the plan of the Russians? You're seeing them establish defensive positions in a lot of these locations in and around Kherson. Again, if the Ukrainians were to counterattack, I think they could possibly take some of these towns back. Kherson was the first major city that the Russians took. If they were to lose that, I really don't know where Putin would go from here. He's running out of forces. Those forces he does have, he's just cobbling them together. Some of them are even private contractors tied in with military forces. And the morale is breaking across all the propaganda channels right now, to include Wagner Group mercenaries talking about how incompetent the force is on the ground. I think it's a negative sign for the Russians. And I wonder what they will do in the intermediate to just try and keep this battle going.
Hey, Clint, good morning. It's Jonathan. We used social media over the weekend full of accounts of the Ukraine's successful counteroffensive, regaining territory. We also heard from the British Defense Ministry suggesting that Russia has now lost fully one third of its troops that had been committed to the offensive in Ukraine. And I think you know what I'm going to ask you here. There's been so much talk there about the terrain, the Donbass, the Ukraine's muddy season that's really going to slow and bog things down. Talk to us about how we're seeing just that being yet another factor contributing to what to this point has been an inoffensive Russia offensive.
Yeah, what's remarkable is that the Russians, now that the ground is getting a little bit more solid, now that they've had 6 weeks to really reposition from Kyiv some of their forces, even when they move here from Belgorod, this is a slow, slow march. I think there are many analysts that believe they will abandon altogether this Izium axis. That's the one where a lot of the generals were essentially pushing to try and get that advance to head to the south. What you're seeing are much more muted attacks here, all trying to connect, but they're not getting very far. It's very small or very incremental, and they're taking massive losses. The one thing we don't know, Jonathan, that's very important about all of this is what is the state of the Ukrainian military? We see a lot of the Russian losses because they're all over social media. We see the propaganda videos that come out of captured Russian soldiers, but we don't know the status of Ukrainian forces. The one thing that is for sure, just from watching these videos, the Ukrainian use of drones, both small and larger, and the use of artillery has picked up. And those indirect fires being employed here in the east, I think, are having a devastating effect on the Russian military, both in their armor columns, but even some of the videos that you're seeing of munitions being dropped straight into trench lines.
All right, Clint Watts at the big board, as always. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. We really appreciate your insights, giving us some great perspective on what's going on the ground there. Richard Haass, I'd say shocking, but not so shocking, because this Russian army has been pathetic from the start. But still, I guess even worse than even the skeptics might have expected. What is the impact of on Vladimir Putin? As we've said here for some time, not being able to roll up a win on the ground to allow himself to try to save face and go to the negotiating table without being shamed.
Joe, you know, we're beginning to see some cracks in his information control. We saw some oligarch over the weekend questioned his health and Putin's judgment. It hasn't reached the point of a critical mass yet. The Russian, you know, and what's interesting to me is what Clint was talking about is whether at some point it reaches a tipping point and whether you would have a collapse. But we're not anywhere, or we don't appear to be near that yet. It's one thing not to succeed. It's another thing to fail quickly. And I don't see that yet happening. It could happen. No, the question for Putin is whether he simply tries to hang tough It's also an interesting question of how good is the information he's getting of what was just described. Does he decide to consolidate and continue to define sex success down? That's been one of the patterns that he gets ever more modest in his definitions of success. Look, conceivably, there's two other things. One is Putin essentially does, if things get bad enough for him, choose to do something of a ceasefire or some sort of a negotiated thing. I'm skeptical. The other is whether this creates the potential for some kind of a move against him from the inside. Things would have to get awfully bad for people to discover the courage to do that. But what's clearly apparent here is Putin is not remotely in the zip code of winning. And to me, the question is, how bad is the losing? How quick or does it accelerate? And then what are the political dynamics then? We don't know. But this is clear. We could be ending, if you will, one chapter and moving towards another. It's really interesting. It's potentially really positive, also somewhat dangerous, as we've also discussed on this show, because we don't know what a desperate Putin, who's virtually under no constraint at home, might be tempted to do.
Well, it certainly is what many have warned of. I mean, yes, but everybody wants the Ukrainians to win. What happens if Vladimir Putin loses so badly and starts to sense that he's losing power at home and has nothing to lose? Then all of the talk of the use of nuclear weapons suddenly becomes something that American leaders and the West have to consider far more. Let's talk about NATO, because as bad as it is for Ukraine to become a member of NATO, for Vladimir Putin, as much as he feared that, he certainly has to be horrified at the prospects of Finland, a country that shares over 800 miles of border. And how long? Maybe 2 hours from the Finnish border to St. Petersburg, his birthplace, one of the great cities in Russia and Europe. How horrifying for him that Finland and Sweden now are going to become members of NATO. I'm curious your thoughts on those developments over the weekend. And also, how do we solve a problem like Erdogan, as they sang in The Sound of Music, who's now saying he doesn't want Finland in?
Well, one, it's certainly the irony of this is rich. You know, there were all sorts of people who claimed that to some extent this crisis was brought about by NATO enlargement. Vladimir Putin has done more to boost NATO enlargement than any Secretary General of NATO. Look what's happened. Look at this new border, as you just pointed out. Look at the map. It is stunning if one looks at the Finland-Russian border now. So the strategic position of Russia has deteriorated both geographically now, as well as given the exposure, how poor their military is, the loss of men and equipment. This war has, the word is debacle. This has been a geopolitical debacle for Russia. He's not exact. Mr. Putin doesn't quite meet the genius standard in what he has done. The only tragedy of all this is how many Ukrainians have lost their lives or seen their lives disrupted. But strategically, this is a debacle for Russia. I think at the end of the day, Mr. Erdogan, who's always has a very narrow, shall we say, I'll be generous this morning, sense of self-interest, I think he's most concerned about Kurdish issues and the relationship of both the governments in Finland and Sweden to the Kurdish political movement that Mr. Putin sees as a direct threat to an exaggerates it, obviously misreads it to Turkey. So my hunch is going to try to get some bargaining in there, but this is going to happen. And I think what's also going to happen, Joe, is even before these two countries come into NATO formally, particularly if Erdogan manages to delay it, I think there'll be some kind of de facto NATO membership, some type of an interim arrangement where the Russians will be signaled, if you were to attack NATO, if you were going to attack Finland and Sweden, we will treat it as an attack on NATO.
Yeah. Richard Haass, yeah. Thank you very much for your insight. We've got a lot to get to this morning. Coming up earlier, we mentioned the dangerous rhetoric. The third ranking Republican in the House, Elise Stefanik, has been engaged in. We'll talk about her use of the phrase pedo grifters in a tweet. among other things. The Michigan lawmaker who fought back against Republicans using that kind of dangerous language joins the table. Plus the issue Congresswoman Stefanik was trying to weigh in on before turning it into a dangerous attack line of the Democrats. A major manufacturer of baby formula gives an update on how long it could take to restock its supply. Also ahead, amid all of the tragedy in Ukraine, an inspirational moment for the war-torn nation. Morning Joe is coming right back.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable, high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
46 past the hour, an update now on the ongoing rush for parents nationwide to find baby formula. Abbott Nutrition, a leading manufacturer plant in Michigan, is still silent as it awaits FDA approval to begin producing baby formula again. The plant was shut down after two infants died from a bacterial infection that may have originated in the formula produced at the plant. Abbott says 2 months after the FDA investigation, the agency still hasn't shown clear evidence linking its formula to the infant's illnesses and death. Abbott Nutrition wrote in a statement that once the FDA clears the plant and production resumes, it will take about 2 months for formula to arrive on store shelves. The shutdown highlights the fragility of the infant formula supply chain. Only four companies control 90% of the baby formula market, leaving the supply chain highly vulnerable to massive disruptions such as the one happening right now. We will keep you posted on that. Meanwhile, GOP conference chair Congresswoman Elise Stefanik slammed the White House for sending baby formula to migrant families at the southern border amid this nationwide shortage, tweeting, quote, "The White House, House Dems, and usual pedo grifters are so out of touch with the American people that rather than present any plan or urgency to address the nationwide baby formula crisis, they double down on sending pallets of formula to the southern border. Joe Biden has no plan." Her office later said she used the term in reference to the Lincoln Project. Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who went viral for her passionate speech slamming Republicans after herself being called a pedophile by her Republican opponent, responded on Twitter in part, quote, anyone claiming to legitimately care about children should stop using rhetoric that will get people killed. And boy, that's everything we're talking about this morning. Rhetoric that you see on Twitter, that you see on even some media and social media sites. And it's rhetoric that's just flying around. And Mallory, it's good to have you here with us.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate your coming from your hometown, you're leaving your 15-month-old. but this is this is where we are now, and you've become, in a sense, a voice against this. Where do you see this going, and why is it so difficult, do you think, for Democrats to find a voice to push back against this type of rhetoric?
I mean, it's terrifying to see. You know, I tweeted this response a few days ago, and then we've just seen the result of a horrific shooting targeting a black supermarket in a town far away from where this shooter lived. And this is the result of rising rhetoric, is it sends a signal to people to take action and to start shooting if we don't stand up and push back and say it's unacceptable and it's just hate out in the open.
And Jean, there are going to be those who say, how could you blame us for what the 18-year-old shooter did in Buffalo? Or how could you blame us for, I mean, how did these words end up in those actions? They can separate it, but it's becoming kind of a group think to an extent.
You know, the response is, how do you sleep at night? I mean, you know, so free speech isn't free. Speech has consequences. And what they are doing, and they're doing it deliberately and knowingly, is they're going after votes, campaign contributions, television ratings with rhetoric that they know is false. They know is inflammatory. They know arouses you know, passions, and they know is potentially deadly when it fills the ears and minds of susceptible, vulnerable people like this shooter in Buffalo, who hear it as a call to action. They don't hear it as rhetoric. They don't hear it as entertainment, infotainment, which is one way you could describe a lot of the shows on Fox, in the evening, as infotainment. But that's not the way people are hearing this stuff. They hear it as a call to action, and action, in this case, means killing people.
And Joe, I want to carefully say, you and I both met Elise Stefanik at the very beginning. Jean did as well. But what the change that has happened is fueled not just by powerful politicians on the far right, the MAGA right, but also by Fox or by other networks that not only give her a platform, but lift her up.
I think it's fueled by the fact that she wants to be the next Speaker of the House. I think it's fueled by the fact that she wants to get as close to Donald Trump as humanly possible, as close to that base as humanly possible. And there are many people who have said close to Trump that Kevin McCarthy will never be Speaker of the House. And they've been saying that for a year and a half. They've been saying that since January the 6th. And so you take somebody who, again, another one of these Harvard people. My God, yeah, what do they teach at Harvard? Another one of these Harvard people.
Poor Harvard.
That just say the most bizarre crackpot thing. She knows better. And yeah, you're right. We met her. And I really, really impressed with her. I had high hopes for her. And the weird thing is, and this is what I thought, you know, you look at somebody like Madison Cawthorn, not to go too far afield here.
Yeah.
But, you know, they could talk about less taxes. They could talk about smarter regulation. They could talk about a stronger military, a stronger NATO. They could talk mainstream issues and be reelected in their districts for 100 years. I know, because even a guy like me got reelected by talking about these sort of Main Street Republican issues. Yeah. And when somebody's racist, you call them out. When somebody goes far afield, you call them out. But she's made these bizarre choices, Jean Robinson, and just getting crazier and crazier by the day. And again, you just wonder, I don't mean to be naive about this, but what's worth it? What's worth it?
Donald Trump? Is Donald Trump going to be loyal? We see how long Donald Trump's loyalty lasts. He throws people under the bus all the time. Yeah. He did it again last week.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's what he does. And so, you know, if you get close to Trump, eventually you'll get thrown under the bus. But, you know, with Elise Stefanik, it's obviously naked ambition. You're absolutely right. She wants to be the next speaker. She sees this as her path. And she's gone completely overboard on it in a way that, again, I stress, is dangerous and potentially deadly. And we see the results in Buffalo. But, you know, Mallory, I want to ask you about the state of Michigan where I went to school. It's in some ways, you know, one of the front lines of this sort of disinformation versus real information conflict. Tell me about people who live in this alternative reality and how you're trying to reach them.
Absolutely. I mean, Michigan is everything all at once. This is a state that elected Gretchen Whitmer, Dana Nessel, Jocelyn Benson, but has more homegrown militia activity than any other state in the country right now. This is where Timothy McVeigh trained before carrying out a domestic terrorism attack, the likes of which we had never seen. And people are being inundated with this messaging. I get calls from constituents, a woman who calls fairly regularly, and you hear it in her voice. Mm-hmm. She fundamentally believes the 2020 election was stolen. She fundamentally believes that, you know, quote unquote, biological men are destroying girls' sports, and whatever the message is from Tucker Carlson.
So where's she getting her information?
Likely from Fox News and from the Michigan GOP. If she is on the email list, we have seen that the Michigan GOP has been replaced by fringe conspiracy theorists, and traditional Republicans are just falling in line and not being willing to let go of power or to stand up against a takeover that is very likely going to lead to the end of us having free and fair elections.
Joe.
Didn't Biden win Michigan by like 100?
Overwhelmingly. Not even close. We've had 250
like
audits of the election.
But yet this is happening as we get toward the midterms. Joe?
Well, and Senator, I'd love to get your insight since you are on the front lines in Michigan here. I you know, it's been my belief since January the 6th that, yes, the actions by these radical Republicans, some of these radical Republicans, is certainly more frightening than anything we've seen in American politics in some time. But also my belief, especially when I hear somebody like you pushing back and fighting back against this madness, my belief is that it actually makes them weaker politically. It makes them weaker statewide in Wisconsin, in Michigan. You look in Pennsylvania at the absolute crackpots that the Republican Party seem to be destined to nominate for a governor's race and the Senate race. That makes them weaker in the fall, does it not?
Absolutely. But we have to be very clear about not being afraid to say so. The official Republican nominee for Secretary of State is a woman who said that yoga is a satanic ritual that the LGBTQ community goes against God's design. And we can't be afraid to wade into this and say this is not normal. I'm very intentional with my constituents because I represent a lot of Republicans to say this is no longer the traditional Republican Party. These are anti-government fringe extremists. And the choice right now is between people who want the government to work and people who don't. And we've got to get back to a place where we are debating tax policy. I've got a constituent who says, I just want it to be boring again. I don't want to have to pay attention to you guys.
Wouldn't
every day.
We all? I know. Well, we really appreciate what you're doing. Michigan State Senator Mallory McMorrow, thank you very much. Very good to see you.
Thank you.
Hope to see you again soon. Still ahead, new details surrounding the suspect. Investigators believe carried out a racially motivated mass shooting in Buffalo, New York over the weekend. It comes as the U.S. sees a dramatic spike in hate crimes in 8 of the nation's 10 largest cities. We're going to dig into what's driving the recent string of violence. Plus, it's proving increasingly more difficult for Moscow to hide its military failures in Ukraine. Retired Navy Master Sergeant Jason Beardsley weighs in. We're back in just 2 minutes.
You can live out your MasterChef dream when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.